Independent wrestling is pretty damn fucking cool.
We're sitting down in the spotlight and squared circle with Rhino.
We're trying to bring more awareness to the independent professional wrestling scene.
Undoubtedly thankful for anybody that just decided to tune in and actually liked us enough to keep listening.
You're tuned into a show of such thermonuclear awesomeness, your head might just implode into another quantum universe. That's right, it's Grapple Talk with your very imposing hosts, A.C. Riley, Nicholas Ragnar, and Jesse Von Ruden. Stick around, you don't know what is going to be coming out of their mouths.
And welcome into Grapple Talk, episode number 78. What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? My name is Nick Ragnar, joined by A.C. Riley, Jesse
Hello.
Von Ruden.
Hey, how's it going?
Guys, awesome show today. We're sitting down with Ben McCoy. Yeah, it's going to be a great show, man.
Absolutely. Ben McCoy of ICW. Great guy to talk with. A very, very experienced vet of the game. It's, you know, anytime you talk to him, it's going to be a time under the learning tree like it will be this week in the spotlight.
And, of course, he has one of the most perfect beards you're ever going to see.
This it is magnificent.
It is like a burning bush.
A burning bush.
It's like red.
So Moses talked to it? He was
yes,
like,
Moses did.
He was like, what do I do, man?
And his beard was like, here are 15 commandments. And, of course, you know, as Moses was coming out, he dropped five of them, and hence the 10. You guys have seen Mel Brooks' History of the World Part 1.
Yeah, yep. Of course. Also, ACW was this past weekend.
That was a good time,
pretty fun
man.
Show. Yeah, that was a good time.
We got lost on the way back.
Did we?
Yeah, we were supposed to take a turn on 23.
Oh, yeah,
we
I
missed the
that
turn.
Now.
We ended up on County J. And then Nick's like, hey, man, I got to really go pee, brother.
And then, yeah,
so
yeah.
so we pulled
that.
Off on the
oh,
side
yeah.
of the road, and we were urinating, and then Nick commented on how the stars were really bright out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, we had like a real moment there while we were taking a piss.
It was like the most real moment ever.
Yeah, it was pretty real.
And then on Saturday, now got rained out without actually any rain. So then instead, Tyler Jackson and I went to the Appleton Mall where there apparently is a sword shop there.
So did you buy a sword?
No, but I really wanted to.
How much are swords?
I think there was some like the Ridley blades from the Chronicle of Riddick. Like those were like 30, 40 bucks maybe.
Oh, that's not even
that
that's
doesn't
not
seem too bad.
You could get like the claymore from Game of Thrones like for a couple like 100, 200 bucks or something like that.
Oh, okay. That makes
sense. So I mean, like it ranged like depending on what you were getting and everything like that and how big the sword was.
See my an old friend of mine, I went to their house a couple weeks ago, and it's like it's a normal house, and then they have like the you know, what's Raphael's weapons called?
He's like got size.
The size? Yeah.
Yeah, they look like forks.
Yeah, the size. Yeah, they look like forks. He had those on the wall, just like regular-ass house, and all of a sudden these are just on the wall somewhere, and I was like...
Like ninja size?
Yeah, they were
out?
Crossed. Huh. And I was like, that looks kind of stupid, but then like I was at my house a couple days ago, and I was like, you know what would look badass in this living room? A fucking sword. Like, just up on the wall, just a huge sword. You know, tune in. You have a burglar broke in, and be like, holy shit, this guy's for real.
Well, that happened to you before, and you were asleep. So.
Yeah, exactly. But if I had a sword hanging up, maybe he'd be like,
what,
dude.
You're going to have it over your mantle, like, by your bed?
Yeah.
So, like, the guy comes in. He's like, ooh!
Yeah!
Yeah!
This guy's a freaking ninja!
Yeah.
Whoa, come on. Yep. What do you want? And then I'd, you know, probably accidentally fall and, like, stab myself.
So you're saying you're going to buy a sword now?
I want to buy a sword.
So what you're saying is you want to live by the sword and die by the sword.
But I want a cool sword. I don't want, like, just some regular-ass sword. I want, like, a really intimidating...
A regular-ass sword. Yeah. Like, so you want one that's a reproduction of a sword that's on TV?
Oh, yeah. Like a lightsaber.
Here are some featured shows that are appearing in the Midwest area.
All right, we're starting things off this weekend with MCWA's Point Break this Friday, June 26th.
What, like the movie Point Break?
Maybe. You have to figure out at MCWA.
Like the WWE pay-per-view Breaking Point?
No, that is definitely not what it at all. Rookie Sports Pub, 1519 Oak Street in Wyandotte, Michigan. Championship on the line as Mark Joka, who is the longest reigning champion in MCWA history, takes on the challenger Sweet Willie Watts. MCWA Cruiserweight Championship on the line as DBA takes on Mr. Nifty. And the Women's Championship will have the first ever be crowned as Ingrid Inslee takes on Princess Tenchi. And then also in action, one half of the tag team champions, Owen Travers, takes on Jack Verville. So four great matches there lined up for you this Friday in Wyandotte,
Michigan. There's probably more, right?
There's plenty more, but we're only covering four out of the great matches that are lined up for Friday. Doors open at 7:30. Action begins at 8:00. It's a little bit of a later show. You usually we're used to like 7, 7:30. Not usually doors opening at 7:30, but.
Well, I mean, I can understand why they want a later show. I mean, with summer extending its hours right sure. now, I mean, yay, 8 o'clock, that's a pretty reasonable time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, look at BCW. They wait till 7:30 and then they fill up their show. So maybe if you wait an extra half an hour from that, maybe that's actually packs it all. You never know.
In theory, if you wait until 9.
But if you went to like midnight, it's just like, no, no. That's not going to happen. General admission is 10 for this show that starts at 8. Kids and under, 12, kids 12 and under, excuse me, kids 12 and under ages are free admission for Point Break, Wyandotte, Michigan, this Friday at the Rookie Sports Pub.
New Wave Pro Wrestling on Saturday, June the 27th at the Owen Valley Sports Complex. That's 575 Fifth Avenue in Spencer, Indiana. New Wave Pro Wrestling Champion Mark Vandy will face either Cole Radrick or the Outlaw Jackson White. Plus, the Painted Warrior Jason Levi will take on a Krauser. Mastermind Bob Rogers will be in one-on-one action. Actually, just kidding. It's triple threat action.
Nice joke.
Yeah. Taking on Jay Tank, Oleander, and Big T Thomas Moore. Plus, you got Anthony Lee up against Justin Myers. Doors open at 6. Show starts at 7. Advance tickets are $8. Door admission is 10, and children 5 and under get in for free with a paid adult, because obviously if there's children that are 5 and under just walking around town and they want to get in, they're not going to let them in. They're going to be like, where are your parents?
Why, they're not a babysitting service.
Yeah, exactly. Because they're not a babysitter. They're not babysitting pro wrestling. They're New Wave Pro Wrestling this Saturday in Indiana.
Sorry, kid, you can't come in. I know your parents are doing heroin in the corner, but you can't come in.
The Stone Cold's going to be there.
Well, God damn it, son. God
yeah, maybe.
Texas Rattlesnake. All right, well, UPW Returns number 5 is coming up on Saturday, June 27th at the UPW Arena, 1000 Delta Avenue in Gladstone, Michigan. Our main event is for the UPW Heavyweight Championship as champion Melvin Hayes defends against challenger Supreme Brett Powers. Now, this match has been circled on a card for the last couple months. We're finally going to see it. It's going to be a good one. The UPW Tag Team titles are on the line as champions Order 66, Nathan Gust, and Shoeless Tyler Jackson will be taking on Team Canada of Brad Sharp and Max Pride.
Brad Sharp and Max Pride?
Yeah.
Team Canada.
Team Canada. Yeah. Of course, we're going to see Brian Skyline in action as he takes on Ken Nash.
Ken Cash.
Ken Cash. Wow, look at that.
Max Pride?
Max Pride.
Ken Cash. I've seen Ken Cash before. I don't know why I call him that.
That's the weekly Colin Brooks plug for the record.
And the grudge match will be Joe Schwartz taking on Romeo Valentino with Mickey Doyle. Doors open at 6. Show starts at 7. Ringside seats are 20. General admission is 15. 10 for advance. And kids, $5. So that's not too bad. But these are just 3 of the shows that are probably happening this weekend. There's probably going to be a lot more. And AC Riley, where can they find those shows?
You can check it out on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thegrappletalk. 2 shows for sure they're happening this weekend are the IWA Mid-South Queen and King Deathmatch Tournaments. Mm-hmm. We were told that this was actually going to be their last series of shows. But turns out, after we recorded last week's episode, that they decided, you know what, we're going to keep going. So it looks like this actually will not be their last show, so just a little bit of a clerical update for that IWA is still going to be going after this weekend.
Yeah, plus one of our fellow AV nerds, Jill, is going to be down there taking photographs both nights.
Yeah, takes great pictures for the record.
Yeah, fabulous photographs.
Phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
Finn Balor.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's a new picture of what he looks like in the new video game coming out.
Really?
Looks pretty realistic.
Go figure. He was one of the 6 guys first announced for that game.
I know.
Really says something about his stock, right?
Yeah,
Now, speaking of stock, one of the things we actually saw this week was you have this bright idea about putting AC Riley on a t-shirt for Grapple Talk. Let's talk about this one.
We were kind of talking about it at ACW, and everybody has merchandise, and it's like, why not? You know, I mean, I know we don't get in the ring and stuff like that, but I thought, you know, merchandise, it's not cheap to make, but it's not the most expensive thing to make either, and it'd be kind of fun, you know.
Depends on where you go, really.
I've actually already picked out the image I want to use for the face. So I want to throw AC Riley on the front of the t-shirt, maybe put AC Riley closing comments under that, and then, you know, obviously we can have the Grapple Talk logo in the back. But, you know, I think that comes from an advertiser's mind that, yeah, I mean, people probably want to represent your brand, but if you have something that's, you know, I just personally think it would, you know, for people that listen to the show, it'd be really relatable opposed to just having a Grapple Talk shirt because, you know, I think Ace Relay gets picked on a lot, and I think that's kind of part of what the shirt kind of embellishes. And it'd be, you know, it kind of speaks to what our personality is all about.
By that logic, they would sell out every time.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Is it a picture of him actually asleep?
No. It's actually a picture of him when he was, like, 8 years old, and he looks completely just really dumb.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Wow, are you sure that wasn't
kind of getting shooed a little bit?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that brings up a good question. It's like merchandising. What exactly are the parameters for good merchandising and bad merchandising? This past week, actually, Snake Eyes actually handed us his hip-hop album. Hopefully we can play a track from that on
this week's
show.
To on the way home, but
it was packed up, you know, but we still want to check it out. But yeah. when does it was a great idea for him, by the way, to actually just hand those out at the show, because I think he got a lot of people talking about it, which is really awesome. AC Riley, what exactly makes good merchandising and what exactly makes bad merchandising, since we're on the subject of merchandising this week?
I think it really depends on what you consider good and bad merchandising, and I think it also depends on what people are going to buy. I mean, we see a lot of parodies of certain shirts. You know, we see a lot of the Bullet Club parodies. We see a bunch of other shirts like that are ripoffs of like PBR and Miller Lite and all that stuff. And sometimes they sell, but are they selling because the designer, like, oh, that's such a cool shirt, I want it? Or is it because, oh, I really like this wrestler, so I want to buy whatever they're selling at that point? So, I mean, it really depends. I mean, it's all what the creator wants to do in reality. But, I mean, yeah, it's
kind of just got a little meta right there.
Yeah. It's not an easy question because really, you know, good and bad is really, it's...
Well, how about, like... Let's just start naming off merchandising, right? So okay. T-shirt, good or bad?
Good.
Good. Really good.
Well, I think it's, you know, it's for some reason, a lot of guys over on that side of the state do a really good job with their T-shirts. I think they're all really, like, really unique and kind of cool designs. I mean, yeah, they're kind of like offshoots of other ones, but they're really, they're cool. You know, like Avalon shirts, it sticks out. It stands out. It's not just Joey Avalon. Like, he has the cool logo on it. Like, Porn Stash. Like, it's a creative logo with, you know, kind of like the glasses and the stash.
Yeah, it's
it
got
looks
a gimmick. Cool. Yeah. You know, it's got his mustache.
It looks cool. Like, you know, Gus Pyre shirt. I personally think it's, like, you know, it's just, you know, even Nathan Gus shirt just by itself. You know, the symbol, you know, is that a tool symbol or is that an ICP symbol? I never even know.
Which one?
Hey, the one where he has, like, you know, the running man.
That's ICP. Yeah, that's
ICP.
The Hatchet Man.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's... But, you know, he made it look like more like Nathan Gus with a, you know, shit
yeah.
like that. And I mean, I think that's just, you know, it's kind of cool. It's like when you look at stuff like that and, you know, as a consumer and you're like, oh, like that shirt would be cool outside of the element of pro wrestling, that's when you know you're selling a good product. Because, you know, you don't want to sell something that's like, oh, I'll only be able to wear it at an ACW show. You want to sell something that people can wear all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, like Sexy KC shirt. I like that green and black shirt. I mean, for the longest time, I'd wear that.
He's never bought one.
I'd wear that. No, he gave me one.
Actually, oh, yeah, you earned it, actually.
Yeah, I earned it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I would
wear that out in public, you know? When Nathan Sensation gave me a shirt. You know, it's just a picture of Nathan Sensation. I'm probably most not likely not going to wear that out in public. But, you know, it's when it comes to T-shirts, it's a matter of just that branding and making something that's worthwhile for a person to buy so they can wear it as an everyday shirt, too.
And I think that's the thing, too, is that T-shirts are really never going to go out of style. I mean, no matter what. I mean, you can have a shirt sold at it, you know, you could be a heel, you could be the most hated heel in the wrestling business, or you could be the most likable face. And more than likely, if people like your shirt enough, they're going to be like, well, I would like to wear that shirt to other places. I mean, I wear my wrestling shirts around. I mean, I wear my Gus Pyre shirt. I wear my BCB shirt that I bought from Pro Wrestling Tees. You know, if it's in the laundry and I'm like, I feel like wearing this today, I'm going to wear that.
What,
boom.
Is it clean or dirty?
It's obviously going to be clean, Jesse.
I wear dirty shirts sometimes. But here's the thing, too. I'll let you talk real quick. But when it comes to the Grapple Talk shirt, if you go to Walmart, what are all the shirts at Walmart? They're memes. So
yeah,
what basically. The Grapple Talk shirt imposes is a meme. And that's, you know, I would like to think a lot of wrestling crowds are a Walmart audience. I mean, they're not, you know, I'm assuming that a lot of, you know.
That sounds like a meme.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's what I'm trying to say is that, you know, those kind of shirts are in. And when you think about it, you know, selling a shirt, you can't just be like, well, I want to sell a shirt with, you know, my whatever on it. You have to think of what a consumer would want. You know, that's what a lot of these guys, I think, did really well, because if you notice, when they're on the outside of the ring, I mean, it seems like some of these guys are selling shirts like hotcakes.
Yeah.
Especially when we're at the show. I mean, you see people all over the crowd wearing shirts for their favorite guys, you know.
That is definitely true. All right. What about can koozies?
Can koozies.
Yeah.
What do you think about can koozies?
I think they're great.
You really?
They're phenomenal.
How would you sell a can koozie at a show then?
It's pretty easy. Why don't you keep your drink cold? Get your official BCB, you know, can koozie.
Yeah.
It's great.
I think it definitely helps at the alcoholic events because, like, especially at the bars that...
Well, even if, like, a non-alcoholic event, you can actually get soda. You can use a can koozie for your soda as well.
With soda, with beer, I think it's really dependent on the venue, too, because, you know, you got the venues that serve it in the plastic cups, and then you have some that serve the cans. So the ones that can, that's perfect because, like, hey,
can really
cold.
Fit one in a plastic cup, too, you know?
Yeah, but then it's just kind of weird because it's a plastic cup that doesn't have a lot of that integrity. So if you hold it, and it's like, whoops, and just spilled all my
drink. I think you can get a can koozie for, like, I think you can make a profit off selling them for $1 because I'm pretty sure other people have done that before. So I think if you're, like, the Beer City Bruisers, that'd be a perfect selling. If you came out with beer with a Beer City Bruiser can koozie, do you know how many people would probably pop for wanting to buy one for only $1?
It's like, oh my God, who bought that?
You'd probably sell like hot. Yeah.
Why not me?
A lot of that, too, is, you know, when you're selling something outside the ring, if you're wearing it or using it on your way to the ring, like if you have a Gus Pyre, like, headband.
Yeah.
Or if you have, like, an AC Riley headband, it's like AC Riley. And it's like, you know, it's something that nobody else has, a headband.
If Joey Avalon started selling headbands, they would sell like hotcakes.
Exactly.
Like, well, if it just says Avalon.
Yeah, it probably would because it's like, I have headbands, you don't even want these. And it's like, they're only, you know, and it's like the cheaper the merchandise, the more likely they'll buy it because a t-shirt's $10. But if you have a headband, you're like, like $3. When everybody else around the ring is selling things that are $10 and you have a headband for $3, people are going to be like, oh, $3. Here you go.
So, like, a slap bracelet.
A slap bracelet would be awesome.
I think actually made a good point about this a long time ago, is that we were talking long ago about, like, ticket prices and that, you know, when they're a little bit cheaper, like $10, the average wrestling fan only brings X amount of cash, so the less they're paying on the admission, the more they can spend on merch. And that kind of goes hand-in-hand with the cheaper, you know, merch that it sells. Like, oh, I got $20 left. Maybe I'll get a beer. Oh, hey, look at that can cozy for $1. Look at that bandana for $1. I'm just going to walk away like a bandit with all this stuff that I'm buying.
So we actually came up with some good ideas for merchandising. Let's talk about some bad ideas for merchandising. What about action figures?
Yeah, that's a bad idea.
I think that's really expensive in a lot of ways because it's cool when you see an action figure being made. Like, you know, I popped when I saw somebody made, like, a Randy West action figure and, like, a Kiki Rose one. I was like, oh, that's really cool that somebody took the time. I mean, like, at BCW, we got to see that fan that made that Joey Avalon, like, pop figurine. And I was like, that's really cool that somebody actually took the time and effort to do that. But I think that the reason you don't see those in mass production is just because that seems like more of, like, a personal thing that it was like, oh, hey, I love this guy so much, I'm going to make his own figurine, but it's not really something that maybe wouldn't sell in a mass.
I think it's one of those things that, opposed to all the other choices that you have in merchandise, it's one that's taking too much of a risk because I think you'd basically be relying on a kid walking up to you and being like, oh, dad, can you buy me this action figure? I want to play with that. You know, it's like, unless you're like a super fan, but I think to probably make a profit off an action figure, I'm assuming if you're not going to buy a mass quantity of them, you'd probably have to sell for like 20, 25 bucks just to make money off it, you know? So, but here's actually the one I wanted to bring up to you guys.
Yeah, sure.
In this day and age, you know, with all the things available to us, we hear it all again, like time and time again, but, and I want your honest opinion. I don't want, you know, whatever.
Sure.
8x10s, are they still worth, because I personally, as a guy that goes to the shows, I don't know if I'd ever buy an 8x10. I'd rather buy a t-shirt or a bandana or something that I could use. Are 8x10s really worth it anymore?
Yeah, I still think there's a lot of 8x10 collectors out there. It's an easy piece of merchandise a guy can actually go out and actually get made. Because more than likely, he doesn't have to take the photograph. Someone who's basically already taking the photograph, all you have to do is print them out.
It's true, I guess.
Yeah. You'd be surprised. You'll see fans come to shows with the binders just filled with 8x10s. All you have to do is sign it. That fan's going to be happy. Because then it can go home and be like, oh, I saw my man Mike back in 06, and he signed this with some chicken blood.
With chicken blood.
And the chicken blood's still fresh.
Sounds like we're trying to imitate Todd Gilbertson because he's got that giant bus of like all of his 8x10s are just hanging up on the bus.
No, ACRL, you don't have any 8x10s, so if it's that easy of an advertisement, why don't you have an 8x10?
Which is funny because there's so many photographs of you out there that are worthy of 8x10, yet you don't have an 8x10.
See, for me, a lot of it is I feel that because I'm a heel, that not many people are going to be like, oh, I want to buy his 8x10, even though I hate his guts. Because, like, for me, like, if I'm getting stuff to sign, I'm always getting, like, the poster because either I'm on it or I was on the show. So, like, I think I think the better way to go around that is, like, the promoters, like, for example, ACW, you can get, like, the giant posters sold for a dollar each, and then you can get more signatures, and it kind of
But for you, expands. Though, I mean, this isn't just, you know, what would be smart for a promotion to do based on you being a heel. This is what should be smart for you to do as a wrestler. If you can actually make extra money on an 8x10, and there's actually some fan who wants to buy an 8x10, that's $5 you didn't have. That could be $10 you didn't have. So it makes no sense not to have 8x10s, right?
True, but I think if I was looking at...
And if you were a heel and they actually bought it, right?
What does
that say? They can rip it. They can rip it. I mean, it's perfect.
Yeah,
know?
But I think if I was looking at merch, I think I would go T-shirt over 8x10, just because T-shirt is a little bit easier to... I can just have somebody else hold, like, hey, sell these shirts while I'm in the back or something like that. They buy it, they walk away, boom.
So basically, the reason why you don't have 8x10s is because you don't want to sell them.
Oh, not... yeah.
A little bit.
A little bit. I think it's just because, for me, it's like the logic of a heel going out, hey, buy my 8x10. Like, that's...
But you don't have to go
weird.
Out there and sell your shit.
Sometimes
you know?
You do, though.
If you're at ACW and you have to sit around the ring and do it, people are still going to come up to you. You know? If you're at RCCW, you got people at the merch table taking care of it. So you don't necessarily have to be a salesperson for your own merch at that point in time. And if you go to other shows, you don't have to necessarily be the person to sell it because they have merch people. So you're not going to be out there and be like, oh, no, I hate your guys' guts. Buy my 8x10. I hate your guts so much. Fuck your town. Fuck your local sports team. Stuff like that. Buy my 8x10. You don't have to do that.
Sometimes.
Well, if you notice, after all, a lot of shows, too, especially, you know, when I'm back, you know, at RCCW and things like that, since that's the only place that I actually do anything outside of commentary, and I get to hang around you know, while fans and stuff come up, they all are always like, you know, half the fans there are like, hey, man, really like what you're doing out there. Like, they're not stupid. You know, maybe kids aren't walking up to you and asking for 8x10s, but that's not the people you're trying to sell it to. It's
yeah, exactly. And if you're trying to sell
wrestling.
Merch to kids, you should just, like, get AC Riley Sour Patch Kids or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's like,
we love candy, but, and this is... I hope you get diabetes, kids, off the AC Riley Sour Patch Kids.
What a commercial. That'd be great. Yeah.
I don't know if I want to do that because then I think Vic Ross would turn around and say that we're stealing this stuff again. And we don't want that to happen.
Eesh.
At least until we retire.
So basically we've come up to the point at this point where merchandising is good.
Yeah.
Guys, flex your mental muscles. Go out there and come up with an idea for merch that no one else is doing.
Yeah.
Because this is a good way for you to supplement your income, especially as a wrestler. You might only make $20 a show, but you can walk away with maybe $100 on merch.
Yeah.
And awesome.
I want to do a cheap plug, too, for shirts because, like, I think the biggest thing that I've noticed is that sometimes, depending on where you go, the shirts can be super expensive to get made because it's, you know, you pay for the print, and then it's, you know, the first time you produce shirts, it's super expensive, and then the second time it's a little bit easier. So you're dropping about $300, $400 for the first time for, like, 10 shirts. But Independent Wrestling Apparel over in the Eastern Milwaukee, they won't charge you to make a shirt, and... you can talk with them, but in reality, you can get like 20 shirts from like small to extra large for like $100. That's 20 shirts.
So why don't you have shirts yet?
Well, I'm going to get them made. I'm just saying that that's a cheap plug for anybody that's using the, oh, it's expensive. It's like, if you got $100 to burn, and you want to burn
And that's
it
not
on
expensive
merch,
because it's $5 per shirt. You resell them for $15, you're making $10.
Oh, yeah. You're making a good profit. Plus, too, it's not like pro wrestling tees where you have to have, you know, 5,000 likes and followers. I mean, you could be a nobody. If you just have a shirt and you have money, boom, you can get shirts made and it's easy.
Awesome. Well, coming up next, guys, we have our spotlight in the squared circle, Ben McCoy, ICW, coming on. We'll ask him about everything and everything, like we always do.
Yeah, that's what we do on this show now.
Yeah. So, all right. AC Riley, mid-show comments.
Looking forward to talking with Ben McCoy.
Stick around. Spotlight Squared Circle's up next.
This is Stacey Shadows.
We've said it numerous times that Stacey Shadows is one bad bitch.
And you're listening to Grapple Talk, the best indie wrestling podcast right now known to man.
Thanks for joining all summer long.
The world will die alone. The frail will fall. You're listening to Grapple Talk.
I've been working recklessly. Check it out. Yeah, I'd fight with you any day, Jackie.
Thanks for joining all summer long.
Hey, Grapple Talk listeners, this is Chris from Spot Monkey Media. Are you a professional wrestler, a promoter, a business owner? Spot Monkey Media is graphic design for the wrestling professional. We offer design services for t-shirts, event posters, 8x10s, logos, and even ring gear. But if you're not in the wrestling business, we work outside the ropes. Go to spotmonkeymedia.com for more information. Spot Monkey Media, create your legacy.
What's up, guys? This is professional wrestler Rennie D.
And this is Travis Dirty Mester.
We're the hosts of The Pencil, the professional wrestling podcast every Tuesday.
On iTunes, YouTube, Podbean, and Stitcher.
We bring you guests from the WWE, TNA, and all the major independent wrestling promotions around the world.
Follow us on Twitter at Pencil Podcast or on the World Wide Web, PencilPodcast.com.
Hello, fellow bar patrons. This is the Ring of Honor top prospect, the Beer City Bruiser, Matt Winchester.
And the Beer City Bruiser, no slouch. Many regional titles, came here with a reputation.
And you're listening to Grapple Talk.
Thanks for joining all summer long. And now, the moment you've been waiting for. It's Spotlight in the Squared Circle.
This week at the Spotlight in Squared Circle, we're sitting down with Ben McCoy, a very experienced vet of the wrestling and also of the armed forces. So, Ben, thank you for joining us in this week's Spotlight.
Ah, thank you very much for having me. I've been excited about this.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it was funny. We were talking at ICW, and I just casually mentioned, hey, do you want to be on this week? And they're like, fucking finally, I'm going to be on on the Spotlight.
Well, see, I didn't know how it worked, man. I didn't know if you guys had, like, an application process. You guys had to do, like, background checks.
Well, normally we do.
Blood type, I mean.
Normally we have all this stuff, but we waived it just for you,
yeah,
especially.
That's true. Actually, what we do is we want Kool-Aid points. So you have to send in at least 50 to 100, and then based on that, that's what week you're actually
That just sounds ridiculous.
And the application fee is around $200. So,
yeah.
Yeah, but we waived it just for you.
I totally wish I would have known that. I have four kids, man. I go through Kool-Aid like a mother. It's ridiculous.
So what's their favorite flavor right now of Kool-Aid?
They like the mystery packs where it's like you don't know. And then they're all guessing. Well, then it turns into a great big bottle because one thinks it's watermelon, the other one says, kiwi strawberry, bitch. And then I'm like, don't say bitch. You're six. Don't say bitch. That's not right.
So Ben, we're talking about Kool-Aid, and we're getting you on for in between breaks of Batman, the new game that just came out. So getting into the focus of the Spotlight with wrestling, when did it all begin, man? When did you get your first start with wrestling?
Oh my God, I can remember being like 4 years old and not being able to sleep. I want to say it was like Christmas Eve. And I just decided to go downstairs and, like, sneak a peek at the TV. And there was old AWA wrestling on, just, like, on the blue. And I had never seen wrestling before. And I just remembered it was, like, 3 in the morning. And the program did it was 2 hours. And we ran on, like, the old ESPN channels. And I just never took my eyes off of it. And ever since then, it kind of just graduated. I can remember being 10 years old and my aunt's having me over to their house for WrestleMania 9, which was my first live WrestleMania, watching it live. And I was a huge Bret Hart mark, so it was perfect timing. And then after that, it just kind of, like, I went to college, I did a bunch of things, and I kind of came back to Wisconsin because I went to college in Minnesota. And then the next thing you knew, I was sitting and talking to my cousin, Derek, and we just decided we were going to just screw around and have a wrestling match in his backyard and just hang out. And I don't approve backyard wrestling at all, but it was just like, you know, I was in the middle of the state. We didn't even know that wrestling schools or anything like that existed at the time. This was back in, like, 2003, 2004. And the next thing you know, it started off with one little match on a trampoline, and by the end of the summer, we had an 18-man roster, and we were putting on shows every Wednesday right after school so that the school kids would come. And I mean, we were drawing like 40, 60 people, man. It was pretty ridiculous. And then I know. And then it kind of graduated from there. It was just like a steady progression. I called this ring guy up because I found out that my town hall at my hometown would let us rent the hall for like $40 for a day. And we were like, oh my God, we're totally there. This is like an actual gymnasium. And we felt like such big leaguers going from, you know, a backyard to a gymnasium. And I found on through the internet this wrestling ring, and I called the guy, and he said, $275, and I'll be there. And I said, okay, done. And he came, and we did the show, and this guy named Lance Stansky, who owned the ring, walked up to me after I did my match and was like, have you been trained at all? And I was like, no, I have no idea. We're just having fun. And he goes, you look like you know what you're doing. Would you like to get trained? And I was like, absolutely. That would be amazing. And he said, I have a show for Bruce City Wrestling this Saturday. Come to Shawano, meet me there, and you can ride down to Milwaukee with me, because I was in Wausau at the time. And from there, it kind of wrote itself. I walked in the door, and I remember I saw Frank DeFalco and Matt Winchester standing there, and it just kind of took off. And the whole rest of it became a great big crazy story.
We're talking about the great big crazy story, Ben. Just kind of talking about, I guess, you know, where you started. I mean, you know, what, as a kid that loved the business from the start, and you know, having that great story, I guess, of putting together shows even when you hadn't been formally trained yet. You know, I guess once you first broke in the business, I mean, what was that for? You know, like for you know a kid that I guess didn't have that formal training, but all of a sudden broke into BCW and started training and seeing how things really were behind the scenes?
Oh, it was culture shock. I mean, it was kind of like, you know, having the blinders taken off for the first time, and you're just seeing how everything's done, and you're just like, I just remember like going home that night and being like, oh my God, my head hurts. I learned so much. And, you know, I mean, obviously you're looking at they start running this camp with you, and like you're realizing that everything you've ever done is wrong. Like your lockups were wrong, and everything you were doing with your buddies is bullshit, and you just really, really suck. And the best thing I did was I got really lucky, and we had this clothesline drill, and Matt Winchester was clotheslining guys. And I took my very first clothesline, and I just remember sitting there thinking to myself before he hit me, I was like, just fall as hard as you can. Just fall as hard as you can. Even if it hurts, just fall as hard as you can. And he hit me with the clothesline, and I took this great bump, and he picked me up right away and hugged me and was like, that was awesome. Oh, my God. Everybody that just saw that, do that. And I was like, well, at least I know I can get the shit kicked out of me good. So there's at least a starting point to learn the rest. And I still remember the main event of that show. It was Dysfunction versus Matt Winchester, who is then known as Dinty Moore. And they did this Anything Goes match for the Bruce City title. And it ended with a honeycomb table. And the table broke, but kicked them both up really bad on the arms and stuff like that. And I remember that's how Matt Winchester, if you ever look on one of his arms, he's got a scar over his tattoo. And it was from the very first show I ever went to. That was an indie show. So that was kind of funny.
Yeah, that's the scar that looks like the vertical stripes. Like mm-hmm. He's got like rain, like erosion on his arm, right?
Yep. He went for a super. It was like some sort of superplex, but then Dysfunction turned it, and they just kind of went through it together. And it was, it blew up. It was crazy. I remember I was standing there, and funny story. My training class, I had such great guys in my training class. Mario Andrew Crivello was in my training class. We had a guy named Scotty Pride, a guy named Paul. Lord Con McIntosh was with us in that mm-hmm. training class. And Lord Con, he's a sweetheart. I love that guy to death. He was my first ever manager. He was kind of like the guy that once I had him, they were like, all right, we're going to stick you with them. And they were just thinking, this rookie Irish kid and this old Scottish guy, they're not going to do much, but we'll just throw them together and see what happens. And just some way, somehow, it's just one of those things where it just clicked and it was gold. And then the next thing you know, they were like, okay, you guys are so good. Let's put you in a group. And I came up with the name The Foreign Franchise, and which consisted of myself, Cuba Andrews, who is our English guy, Lord Con, who was our Scottish guy, and then Nick Colucci, who was our Italian. And that was kind of the core group. We had more guys that kind of filtered in and out, but that was our core group of guys. And I remember we blew the whole thing off with getting to wrestle Jimmy Snuka for Bruce City.
Oh, wow.
And it was Yeah, it's pretty awesome. It was pretty, like, you want to talk about an oh shit moment in your career. It's like, hey, the first name you're going to work is Jimmy Snuka. I was like, well, what? You mean Madison Square Garden off the top of the steel cage, Jimmy Snuka? The guy, the forgotten part of the main event of WrestleMania 1? Okay, sure. Let's do that. And, yeah, so that was interesting.
So one thing I remember, Ben, I think the first time I ever heard of you was when I was starting out, and with the last time like Riley, I was thinking, oh, I should probably do an Irish gimmick. And then I remember one of the promoters was like, oh, you don't want to do that because Ben and Chase McCoy, they do the Irish tag team, so you might want to stay away from that or anything like that. So I gotta know, what was it like tagging with Chase McCoy, and how did that really come to fruition with that tag team?
What people don't know is I found Chase. He was wrestling in Powerhouse Pro Wrestling under the name of Beach Bum Chaz. He's going to kill me once he hears. He's going to kill me once he hears this on the radio, or once he hears this through your player. I'm going to get a phone call like tomorrow, and he's like, "You motherfucker! I can't believe you said that."
So
yeah, he used to be this guy named Beach Bum Chaz.
Yikes.
And the way that I had heard of him was that he had surfed on a casket in a casket match.
What?
Well, which I didn't believe until he showed me the video proof of the surfing on a casket, which was his victory dance. It was hilarious. And I remember we watched the show, and him and Rip Ryan Summers were two of the guys that I was like, wow, these guys are good. The rest of these guys are the shits. And I'm going to totally get heat with all of Powerhouse Pro Wrestling now because I said they're the shits, but whatever. They can come down to Kenosha and find me. I'm not a hard guy to find. But I saw Chase, and I walked up to him, and I was like, here is, Troy Walters was also there too, by the way. Mm-hmm. But I walked up to Chase, and I said, here's my phone number. If you want to go and do something besides this, I just want you to know that you're good enough to do more. And the asshole didn't call me for 4 months.
4 months?
For 4 months, that fucker never called me. And then all of a sudden, I get this phone call, and he's like, oh, hi, is this Nicky McCoy? I was like, yeah, who the fuck is this? He's like, oh, this is a Chaz. And he's like, who the fuck are you? And he goes, oh, you met me in Power. And, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember you. And we brought him in, and me and him just really hit it off. I mean, like, friends to best friends to, I mean, that brother tag team, I can honestly say it was very, very real. I never had a brother. I had two sisters in real life. But he was the first, I mean, him and Justin Dredd were like brothers. And it was very easy to do that tag team because we looked out for each other like brothers. We traveled the road together. Every show we were on, we drove together. We had our own theme music on the road, which was Motown Philly by Boyz II Men, which was a ritual that we had every time we went to a show. That was the first song played. And, but to get there, there wasn't a lot. Like, I had walked up to him and said, you should be my tag partner. We should be brothers, and we should have you. Because at first he was going to be Chase Adams. And I was like, I just don't like it. You sound too generic. I was like, why don't you just tag with me, and we can be brothers, and we can just do the McCoy brothers. And he was like, oh, that'd be great. And he, to his credit, he was awesome. Like, we pitched it around, and, like, a lot of people said no. I want to say, like, Frank said no. And Carmine had said no, and just certain people, and Jason Jerry said maybe, but I'm not sure. And Ed Schumann, God rest his soul, from NW, who was running NWA Wisconsin or NWA Midwest at the time, saw us and was like, "You guys are great. You guys need to get all the same gear and matching boots and everything, and you guys are going to be fucking awesome." He goes, "Just do it." And ICW at the time was NWA Insanity, and Dysfunction, to his credit, was like, all right, you guys are put together, do it. Let's see what happens. And, I mean, we just skyrocketed from there. We got matching gear, and we looked apart. We were able to find the singlets that I talked to Riley about here, about the singlets from Brute. We found all those and got, like, I mean, we had four different pairs of gear. I mean, we were legit. You know, because some weekends you'd have a double shot, sometimes you'd have a triple shot. Well, we would never wear the same gear twice. We would always switch our gear out. And that way when people saw us, we were legit, but we were kind of keeping up with the times, too.
And you guys weren't smelling like a bunch of bastards, too.
Yeah. exactly. And it just all kind of flowed really easy. I mean, he was such an easy guy to tag with. And he learned so quick. A lot of, to Chase's credit, a lot of guys get in this business and they flounder for a while because they can't check their ego to do the right thing and learn and shut their mouths and just listen and take all the advice and criticism all as one productive piece. A lot of guys will get the advice, and then they'll hear the criticism, and they're like, well, fuck you, I'm going to do it my way. It's just, wrestling doesn't work that way. That's not the way the machine works. You know, you listen to the veterans, you learn from the veterans, and that's how you progress and get better. And Chase was a guy who, from day one, was very quiet and just listened. And I was the one that was always getting us in trouble because I couldn't shut my mouth. and you know, the next thing you know, I remember, you know, there was a time where, you know, and I don't care. I mean, I might sound arrogant throughout this interview a few times. The one time I'm going to sound arrogant is that I will put our tag team up against anybody's in the independent circuit across America, not just the Midwest, not just Wisconsin. When we were white, I mean, we were white hot at one point. We had every title in the state at the same time. I mean, we had the Bruce City Tag Team Championships, the ACW Tag Team Championships, the NWA Wisconsin Tag Team Championships, and the ICW Tag Team Championships all at the same time. And I don't know of any other team that's done that. And then we went on to win them all again. I mean, we won 9 total, but we won all those twice. And, you know, we were white hot. I mean, you don't get to go and wrestle for the NWA World Tag Team Champions against the Skull Crushers of Venom and Rashi without having, you know, without having the heat that we had, or at the time, the shine, because we were baby faces, to get over with the crowd and make it believable. And tagging with him was always one of my favorite parts of my career. I mean, I loved every second of it. It was just a lot of fun, and he was literally a guy that was, whether it was in the ring or outside of the ring, always had my back and was always, you know, if we're going down, we're going down together kind of a thing, and if we're going to make it, we're going to make it together. And, you know, I could have never have asked for a better tag partner.
Now, how long did you guys actually tag team together?
It was just over 2 years. I mean,
right. So you did almost, all this
it was
in
almost
2 years?
Yeah, 2 years. Yeah, 2.5. I'd say it came almost even closer to 3. When Ed Truman passed away, and we had kind of when I say 2 years, I'm talking, there was a point where we couldn't get booked unless we were a tag team. Like, nobody wanted a singles Mickey McCoy or a singles Chase McCoy. They wanted the team. Or if they did put you in the singles, they wanted one of you guys to escort the other guy out. And, you know, we were really tight, for those 2 years. And when it was, and I remember the day that we decided to break it up, it was kind of, we looked at each other as like, it kind of feels like it's time. I mean, we've won every belt that the state has to offer twice. I mean, we've got to wrestle names and do all the stuff that we want to do. We went to different states. I mean, we got booked in Ohio and Indiana together, and we got booked in Minnesota together. And we had pretty much done, you know, the loop. And we just kind of looked at each other, and I was like, you know, I knew, ironically enough, it was the first time I kind of knew that I wanted to wind down with wrestling. I had just gotten married. Chase was actually in my wedding. And I'm actually in his this fall. He's getting married. I'm in his wedding. We're actually going to the Brewers game this Saturday. So it's still been a friendship that's kind of stood the test of time. But I remember we both kind of looked at each other and were like, I think we're ready. And I remember looking at him and I was like, you know, you're ready now. And he was like, yeah, I know. He's like, I just wanted to make sure that you were thinking the same thing. And I was really happy that, you know, I was always worried, because I was always worried about him. I mean, he's older than me, but I always kind of felt like he was like a little brother, and I really wanted him to succeed. And this business can chew you up if you're not ready for it. And, you know, obviously he became Psycho Chase McCoy and went on to do bigger and badder things than I ever expected. But I'm very proud and very happy for him because he deserves it all.
So do you ever kind of pull rank with that at all, that knowing that you kind of discovered him, like you're just like, hey, man, remember when you were just bumming around PHPW? Remember how I picked you up and now you're here and all that? Do you ever do that?
Nah, not really. Because, I mean, he wasn't the only guy I found. I found Sadist. I found Sadist in a Best Buy in Wausau, Wisconsin.
Wait, was he just standing there? Was he having a match like buying CDs?
In 2004, I found him there. And we were actually, he was actually part of my backyard group. God, he's going to kill me for telling people this. But then again, to be fair, we had no idea where training was. Like, none of us knew.
Yeah.
And he was the first guy after me besides my cousin Derek. Him and my cousin Derek were the next two guys after me that jumped ship and and came to the Indies. And Mark Preedy, who was also with us there, he jumped ship and went in, and it kind of went from there. And then Joey Avalon and so on and so forth.
See, what I think... What I think is really cool about listening to you talk about discovering these guys and really getting to show them and really exposing them to the independent wrestling circuit is that you really showed them that there was more than just one promotion that they were wrestling in. You took them to these other places. And I think that's something that some wrestlers that join the circuit really just think that, oh, I'm at this one promotion. I'm going to stick here until the day I retire or I get called up by WWE, whatever it is. But I think that you were kind of the polar opposite of that. It's like, you know, there's more than just one promotion. Matter of fact, there's X amount in this state, and I can take it to these states and these states. So I think that was really cool to know that you were exposing all these guys we see today to multiple places.
That wasn't even for me. I piggybacked off the guys, and then they piggybacked with me with these other guys. I know any state I went to besides Wisconsin, I owed a Matt Winchester and I owed a Dysfunction. Those two guys got me booked everywhere. Minnesota with MIW and Chan Hansen was all Dysfunction. I mean, he put all that together. You know, wrestling for Dave Hero for the first time in GLCW was all Dysfunction. He put all that together. And, you know, it's kind of funny. The two times I got to wrestle for Dave Hero and GLCW were against two of my best friends on their biggest show of the year at the time. And I got to wrestle Justin Dredd and then obviously Sadus this last December. And that was, you know, awesome. But nobody, you know, the biggest thing that bothers me is nobody does the loops anymore. Everybody's very stationary. You know, when I was, you know, 10 years ago when I broke in, it was like, hey, you want to go to India? My first pro wrestling show that I did anything was in Davenport, Iowa. I didn't even start in Wisconsin. I was a manager named Pat McCoy for Mason Quinn, for Mason Quinn against Matt Winchester. And it was the craziest wrestling story I've ever had. You don't have enough time in your program for it, I promise you. It was the most nuts night of my life, and the fact that I survived and lived through it is amazing.
Yeah, that trip to Davenport's a long ass drive as it is, you know, and it's a weird time too.
And I think that's what people don't like about it is that you know you're not going to make money when you go to other states.
Nope.
You know, I mean, because they're still paying you the $30, $40, $50. I remember I did a show for Dave Hero, and I wound up being Grandmaster Sexy there, Brian Christopher, and my wife, Brian, got married in Memphis the next week, and I ran into him at the mall, and he remembered me, and I wound up on a Memphis Championship Wrestling show, just like that. Because I never took my gear out. I left my gear in my car, and the next day, he's like, hey, you should wrestle, and I got to wrestle Phantasmo, the guy from E, who was the jobber who did the gimmick with the magic tricks and shit.
Yeah, I remember
that too, yeah.
And you know, it was awesome, but like nobody does the loops anymore. I mean, we used to drive down to Marion, Indiana for EWF and get paid $20, not make any money. We'd go on first or second. We'd wrestle in this empty movie theater that the company sucked dick. I mean, they drew like 10 people every time. But I was young and I was like, holy shit, I'm going to different states. This is amazing. And, you know, I got very lucky with, you know, Illinois, because Steve Stone, the Metalheads, was one of the very first vets that I got put in a program with, and who was willing to put me over. I mean, he was amazing. I owe a lot of my career to that guy, because he was the guy who legitimized the Mickey McCoy character. Because, I mean, I had done a nice little thing with Chris Black, and everybody loved it. And Chris Black, to this day, is one of the most underrated wrestlers that I've ever that's ever talked about indie wrestling. He's phenomenal, and nobody talks about him. And it was just one of those things where he loved me and was like, all right, well, I run this promotion down in Illinois, and then all of a sudden all the Illinois doors opened up, and I got to go work for MSPW and Elite Pro. But Elite Pro, again, was Dysfunction helping me out, and also Steve Stone saying, yeah, this kid's good. And, you know, everything was rocking and rolling until the end of my first year, when I had that match with Steve Stone for Rise to Honor for Frank DeFalco. And we were the first, and I think the only main event to this day for Rise to Honor, where the secondary title was the main event. We were a TLC match. And I think it's called the Heritage title now, but back then it was called the No Limits title. It used to be called the No Limits title. And we just killed each other. And we had the biggest table malfunction of all time. We had a table that did, you can YouTube it if you want. But we had this table where it doesn't break. I mean, he gives me a double stop off the top of a ladder, and it doesn't break. He gives me a moonsault off the top rope, it doesn't break. I give him an elbow off the top of the ladder, and it doesn't break. I mean, it was like the table from hell. And literally, we end the match by just saying, fuck the table, and he just hit me across the head with a chair like three times, and I fell down. Ew. And he just got up and took the belt. It was just one of those things.
Well, obviously, we've been talking about the storied career that you've kind of had, but before we go, we need to talk about, you know, what you're doing right now for ICW, working behind the scenes. Kind of talk about where that all started and kind of what you're doing over there right now.
Oh, yeah. I started ICW with Dysfunction. We were working at a t-shirt company together. A lot of my career, I owed to Dysfunction. Matt Winchester trained me, so I obviously owe Matt forever for training me. And Frank DeFalco was the first guy to let me in his doors, and Jason Jerry was the first guy to let me wrestle. But Dysfunction was the guy who kept opening doors for me. I mean, he found me a job down in Milwaukee so I could move to Milwaukee from Wausau, so I could make it so I could try to keep wrestling as a dream, because I was driving 3 hours one way just to wrestle every weekend, and I wasn't getting paid because I was rookie yet. I just got really lucky with that. And then I just remember we were sitting in a t-shirt shop. We did an early a.m. shift. We went in at like 2 a.m. and I think it was about 9 o'clock in the morning. And I just remember him looking at me and being like, man, I just wish there was a Fed that did something different. And I was like, well, why don't you just start one? And he just kind of looked at me, and ICW was born. And the next thing we were doing stuff in Menominee Falls. We ran the first ICW show that September. I want to say it was 06. It just kind of carried over from there. And then when I left, I went into the Army, and he ran it by himself. And when I came back, one of the first times we talked, he was like, so, are we going to put this thing back together? And I was like, sure. I bought the wrestling ring that I talked about, which is ironic. The first wrestling ring I ever bumped in, the guy that I called that day, Lance Stansky, I actually own his wrestling ring now.
Get out of town.
That whole thing came full circle.
Huh.
And so I own that same ring. And now I'm the ring guy who's going around and doing stuff with all the other promotions.
Wow.
ICW is awesome, and I'm really excited about the direction we're going. I mean, before we were just kind of doing matches and doing shows, and we never really had a direction, and now with what we're doing now, we have this direction where it's all about the young guys. We're kind of getting back to the roots of ICW, because the whole point of ICW in the beginning was giving young kids a chance to go and get their teeth cut and actually do stuff without just going and getting squashed all the time, and not just being stuck with another young kid to wrestle. They actually be able to wrestle vets where they can learn and improve. I'm all for improving the business. I think that, you know, if you don't teach the young guys how to do it the right way, it's just going to get worse. And, you know, I refuse to stand by and let it get worse. Wrestling has given me my entire life that I have now. I mean, I met my wife through wrestling. I have my four beautiful children because of wrestling. I had my experiences in the Army because of wrestling. And if it wasn't for wrestling, I literally wouldn't be talking to you right now, because I wouldn't have the life that I have. And it's given me so much, the good and the bad, because it was bad circumstances why I left and why I joined the Army. But again, it took me on a path where, you know, I'm good now. And I feel like I owe wrestling, and I will keep doing the ring thing and keep talking to young guys and keep trying to help improve the business until I feel like I've paid my debt off.
Well, you know, if it wasn't for a small little child, couldn't sleep on Christmas Eve, 4 years old, waking up 2 in the morning, turning on ESPN and seeing AWA Wrestling, yeah, your life could be completely different at this point in time.
Yeah, man, probably. My parents told me that before that all I wanted to be was a fireman. And then I found wrestling, and, like, being a firefighter or a Ninja Turtle just wasn't good enough anymore. So.
Well, Ninja Turtle would have been pretty hard to do at that point in time. I mean, you're a man.
I would have painted my body green and found a shell big enough to sit on my back. I would have done it.
Well, that's a perfect way to end this interview, Ben. Hey, thanks for being on the Spotlight in the Squared Circle.
We gotta hear the story of Davenport. So we gotta have you on in the next at some point to hear that story.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you very much.
We're looking forward to having you on again for episode 84. Still plenty more to talk with you about for sure. And Ben McCoy of Grapple Talk Spotlight and Squared Circle. More Grapple Talk coming up after this.
Hey, everybody. It's me, Darren Corbin. I've always gotten the question, why do I not do my own podcast? Well, I've branched out and I've tried to do Wrestling Reflections and the Wrestlers Reviewing Movie Letter, plus my promos that I flood your feed with all the time. And the number one reason is, when it comes to podcasts, everyone can always find a way to hear myself talk, and there's numerous podcasts out there, but I want to give my endorsement to one very special one. And that'd be Grapple Talk, that covers a lot of the Midwest independent wrestling highlights. See, a lot of the local Midwest wrestlers are the spotlight of the Squared Circle hosts. And that would be Nick Ragner, Jesse Von Rudin, and AC Riley. And every week on iTunes or Podbean, you can catch their podcast. So I just want to give them a shout out. So if you're asking me why I don't do podcasts and you're maybe looking for my opinion, check them out for all your podcast needs and take a look and keep supporting independent wrestling in the Midwest.
Hello, wrestling fans. Colt Cabana coming to you live from the 1 Hour Tease Arena in beautiful Chicago, Illinois. The pro wrestling action has been great so far. As you can see, Joey really dominating the ring so far. There's a beautiful belly-to-back suplex. And looks like Joey's shirt has been ripped.
What's up with that? You ripped my shirt.
Let's go check an instant replay, see exactly what happened. There you can see Joey's shirt ripped from the collar, and that's not good when you're trying to wear your pro wrestling t-shirt.
Man, you ripped my shirt. It's my only shirt. Joey.
Hey, looks like Ryan from 1 Hour Tees just threw Joey Ryan a brand new t-shirt.
Thanks, Pro Wrestling Tees.
ProWrestlingTees.com, over 3,000 wrestling t-shirts designed and sold by pro wrestlers. Wrestlers such as Steve Austin, CM Punk, Macho Man, Mick Foley, DDP, Andre the Giant, Jake the Snake, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Scott Hall, Ted DiBiase, Colt Cabana, Joey Ryan, Cliff Compton, and the entire Bullet Club. All stores owned by pro wrestlers. Support pro wrestling today and visit ProWrestlingTees.com.
Ryan Yanishadis here from the Ringside Report to remind you to watch the Ringside Report every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 6 p.m. on YouTube. Brandon McGrath and I discuss WWE, TNA, and the local independent scene. Go to youtube.com/RB Enterprises. That is the Ringside Report, your front row seat to all things wrestling.
This is the Monster of the Midwest, Sadist. There's a couple of things I really, really like. I like to hurt people, and I like Grapple Talk. So I'm going to keep listening.
Tune into the Indie Power Rankings reveal every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern on Blog Talk Radio, Filling the Void Radio Network. You can also subscribe to Filling the Void Radio Network on iTunes. Give a follow to the Indie Power Rankings on Twitter, at Indie Power Ranking, no GS. Instagram, at Indie Power Rankings. On Facebook, facebook.com/IndiePowerRankings. You can also go to the website where you can see the top 10 for the week, the tag team top 5, anything else independent wrestling related, IndiePowerRankingsIPR.wordpress.com.
Hey, this is Raging Nathan Gust. You are listening to Grapple Talk, where they are raging 25-8.
Well, guys, that was just a great interview there with Ben. It's a... You know, I never really got a chance to meet this guy until Ice Pro Wrestling, and I'm glad I actually did, because he's got a great story to tell, and one of the nicest guys in the indie scene as well.
Yeah, that's great stuff to hear. You know, that's the first time I've ever actually talked to him, and it was definitely a pleasure, and hopefully can look forward to seeing him on the road down the line.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've only gotten to talk with him a few times just at the shows lately with ICW, but every time I talk to him, man, like, he's given me tons of advice, you know, just like with promos, with my wrestling, with my gimmick, everything like that. So, I mean, really grateful just to, you know, have a chance to listen with him. Even if he's not doing much wrestling right now, I think it's still great that he's able to still give back to the wrestling community in the aspect that he does currently.
Yeah, because you don't have to be an actor performer in that ring to give back.
It's time for Wrestler's Perspective.
Hey, anyhow, this week, big news, though. We hear two contracts are coming up with the WWE. Rumor has it Dolph Ziggler and Jack Swagger are both thinking about leaving the E. So, AC Riley, as a wrestler, if you were in their situation, what would you do?
You know, that's a good question, just because I've been in that situation where I've been at shows where I'm not really having a whole lot being done with me, and I'm just kind of going, I'm just kind of almost dead weight at that point. But at the same time, as an independent wrestler, not as a WWE superstar who's making a good amount of money. So, I mean, I guess it would be a little bit different, I suppose, if I was at the WWE and I was having nothing going on. But at the same time, I'm also not factoring in other things that are going on. Like Dolph Ziggler, he has his comedy act and everything where he could obviously do that more freely. He would obviously be able to do more freedom with independent wrestling. So I guess from that perspective, I don't really know what I would do. I mean, it seems a shame to walk away from a big opportunity like the WWE, but at the same time, maybe it's just for the best that they walk away and they can have more freedom.
You know, yeah, it's a really interesting. I mean, I've always been one of the biggest Ziggler fans ever, and I actually think I might like him more if he actually decides to jump ship to the Indies, because that's what I hear. That, you know, the thing is that he's not done with wrestling. He's going to go to the Independents, which would be super awesome, just because, you know, that's somebody could fucking book him.
We'll look at, like, Rey Mysterio, Alberto Del Rio,
Justin Gabriel,
CJ Parker, just yep. Like
Johnny those, Mundo.
Yeah, Johnny Mundo. Those guys left and then instantly picked up. Johnny Mundo's on Lucha Underground. You can see Alberto Del Rio there as well. CJ Parker and Justin Gabriel did that Dreamwave show literally like a week after they got let go of their contract. So, I mean, the opportunities we. Endless
it just,
for those guys.
It speaks so much of the state of indie wrestling now today when guys are willing to leave the Big E to come down and work in the indies. But, I mean, partially too, I mean, you know, maybe it's just they want something to do. They're sick of the same thing they're doing every single week. It seems like Ziggler the same, you know, just wrestling some heel every other week. You know, it's like the swagger's not used half the time. He's probably just working house shows at this point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they probably figure, you know, in the indies, not only can they have a little bit more creative freedom, but they probably have an opportunity more to give back to some of the guys on the lower indies, which would be super cool too, because if you imagine, I mean, these guys still in the prime of their career is able to give, you know, some guys in the indies that experience that they may never get from anyone else, you know, especially from Ziggler and Swagger, who were both at one point on top on at least SmackDown, you know, so I mean, you know, it'd be a good thing for a lot of guys in the locker room as well.
It's interesting, though, because, like, when you think about it, like, not even a year ago, everyone's like, Ziggler is the man, he's the next guy, and now we're talking about him actually leaving to go to the Independents. That says something about the state of wrestling, especially on the biggest stage of all.
What does that exactly mean for the E? Is this a bad thing for...
I don't know, because, like, with the E right now, you got NXT is so hot. And they're just probably biting at the chops to get these guys up to Raw and SmackDown, because right now they have a very hot feeder system. And to have a guy move up, a guy has to leave. So it's like, you only got so many roster positions on a football team, right?
Yeah.
You only got so many roster positions on Raw, even though you have 3 hours.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, people were always really, you know, they're like, what are they going to do when Daniel Bryan's gone? Or what are they going to do when this guy's gone? How are they going to survive without Punk? But it's like, there's a lot of guys down there that they're willing to give that, you know, give that spotlight to, and you know, they've, you know, guys like Rollins, for example, Reigns, Dean Ambrose, just, you know, the three guys from the Shield took that ball and, you know, went with it, and that's, you know, that's how a lot of other guys are being viewed down in NXT right now. I mean, there's like,
Kevin Steen, he's been on NXT, and all of a sudden now he's going to be on the main roster.
But I mean, if you look at NXT, there's probably like 10 guys down there that could do really well in WWE, and now they're just waiting for their, like, they could instantly come in and make an impact. Maybe even more than that. I mean, there's plenty of people down there that could really come in and, you know, maybe take us, you know, be in that spotlight on day one. And, you know, that's, I guess, this, you know, I guess you're kind of right. At this point, it's not as much as being like, we need to keep Ziggler. We need to keep Swagger. Yeah. It's like, we got guys that could probably replace him. So,
yeah, and that's the thing, too, is that we're only hearing that Jack Swagger's thinking about leaving once his contract runs out. We're only hearing that Dolph Ziggler wants out of his contract. Once it expires, he's not going to re-sign it. We're not hearing the other side of it, of that WWE is desperately clamming to get them on, just like with Samoa Joe. Like, now that the reaction for him was so huge, they actually shortened up his independent wrestling contract. They're saying, hey, we got to sign you exclusively now because you're a hot commodity right now.
And who knows? I mean,
he had his last Ring of Honor book last week. Yeah. Saturday.
And who knows? I mean, it could be leverage too. I mean, you never really know nowadays with how stuff is. I mean, Ziggler could be like, yeah, man, think about going independence. It's like, interesting. He could just be seeing where he stands in the company after saying something like that.
It's weird now. Like, in the indies, you're going to start seeing, I think, used to be a level playing field. Now we're seeing tiers. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be interesting to see where it kind of goes in the next 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, if you guys actually thought about it, like, we were going on a road trip maybe, like, 5 years ago, where you're like, oh, man, I can't wait to see Dolph Ziggler maybe at, like, a Fort Atkins or something like that, working for, like, Acronym Soup Company, you know? Like, you weren't thinking about that. You were like, man, Dolph Ziggler, WrestleMania 31, who is he going to wrestle, you know? Like, is it going to be the heavyweight title scene? Now you're actually thinking, you might actually see him in an armory.
Right.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's the thing, too, is that once they kind of look at it, like, moving over to independence, you're like, man, like, you know who I want to see? I want to see Dolph Ziggler and this guy from this Fed go one-on-one, because I think that match would steal the show.
You know what's weird? He might shave off the golden locks. Isn't that, like, part of his thing with WWE? Like, they won't let him not have the golden locks?
I don't know.
I thought that
at one point in time, didn't he dye his hair, like, brown?
I thought he cut his hair, and he had, like, a brown short haircut, and then I thought that I read WWE was like, no, dude, you need the golden locks. And they kept him off TV so he could grow back out and dye it again.
Well, Vince is like, God damn it! God damn it, Ziggler!
We're putting you with Vicky Guerrero now. He's like, fuck.
Be kind, rewind. Tape study.
We're going to go back in time. April 30th, 1990, was the All Japan Pro Wrestling versus WWE Summit from Tokyo, Japan. Guys, this is actually an interesting show because this was the first time I ever actually watched Japanese wrestling. I was probably about six.
Wow.
And I was flabbergasted that it was wrestling outside of America because I only get to see it basically AWA, WWF, a little bit of WCW at that time. But I was flabbergasted just how much respect the Japanese fans actually had. And it's a match between Hulk Hogan and Stan the Man Hansen. Oh, this is going to be a good one, guys. You will enjoy it. It's a wild fight. And you get to see Hogan do some stuff that you never really see him do in America.
Cool.
Really good stuff.
Awesome.
And also, that show has a great match between Bret Hart and Tiger Mask that goes to a 20-minute time limit. It's a pretty good one. Pretty good one. I think it was Misawa at that time was Tiger Mask, so you could see two of the all-time greats.
Sweet. Awesome. Yeah. You have on Facebook and Twitter, I guess, once the show.
Yeah, that's what we do.
Once the show drops.
I wait patiently. I'm like, oh, I got the match.
When
like,
can I post
like,
this?
Oh, my God. When can I post it? And then all of a sudden, like, new graphic tool comes soon. I'm like, oh, all right.
It's like
click. Yeah.
Awesome, guys.
That's how much excitement I have on a Friday.
Great show today, by the way.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad, right? Yeah.
Good show today. Have fun at, you guys will be down at UPW.
Actually, up. It's in the UP.
Nice. Yeah, I know.
Fuck. Yeah. Maybe we'll come up with some new ideas for, you know, merchandise. You
maybe.
Know? Maybe we need, like, a Grapple Talk, like, I don't know, baseball bat or something.
Cassette player?
Yeah.
Or is that too outdated?
Hey, guys, you like Grapple Talk? Get it on cassette.
Oh, that would probably
not work. Low
maybe,
price.
Maybe we can get our own Beats brand. Like, Beats by Grapple Talk.
No, man.
They do, like, Beats by Justin Bieber now, don't they?
No.
Beats by Bieber?
Beats by Bieber.
Let's
Beats
not
to Bieber.
Say we did.
How about cassettes is actually a nice idea. I know some people that actually just have cassette players.
Really?
And plus they're back in style. Why not?
Like records.
Yeah. Press this on vinyl.
Yeah. That might be kind of expensive.
Put on your bifocals. Focus. You know, it'd be great, you know?
Yeah. Stay classy.
AC Riley, close the comments.
I actually do have some things I want to
say. Oh, shit.
Wow.
All right. So first things first, Mikey Wilde's going to take some time off, so best luck to him. He was supposed to be at ICW on Sunday, but Thursday made the announcement. It's nothing to do with wrestling. It's not a personal grudge with anybody. It's just he needs some time for himself because he's not feeling the greatest. He's depressed. So, you know, hopefully he finds what he's looking for, and hopefully he stays away from the mousetraps because, you know, you don't really need a ton of mousetraps when you're just doing day-to-day lives, unless you're dealing with mice. Referencing Powell when he had the mousetrap death match. Also, too, Matt Cage, great independent wrestler. He recently came out, and he shared a story on The Pencil. So give him a listen as well. That's a great story that you'll want to definitely check out, again, with The Pencil Podcast, Rennie D, who has been on Grapple Talk before. And also, a huge shout-out to Darren Corbin, who has a great promo to hype Grapple Talk. So that was a great shout-out.
Yeah, that was pretty nuts. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy. You haven't seen this yet?
No.
Shared it to you guys to our Facebook group.
I watched it, you know. I'm surprised you didn't. You were probably asleep, you know.
When did you? Oh, it's right here.
Yeah.
So a huge thanks to Darren Corbin and Spot Monkey Media for making that all possible.
Awesome.
Cool.
All right. Now can I say it?
Yeah.
You can say it.
Stay classy.
Thanks for joining Grapple Talk.
That's the bottom line.
Because right. Jesse Von Rudin said so.
No, not at all.
Nice.
Oh. Yep.
Gimmick steal.
Keeping you up to date on Midwestern independent wrestling.
Look at us.
Stop doing that MFing, dude. I hate that.
Hey, come on. I'm not stealing your pen.
That's so dumb.
Nice. I see what he did there.
What happened?
Thanks for joining all summer long.